We even have a fair number of the policy folks. I appreciate coming in on a Friday, relatively short notice. This is the only full Ways and Means joint DUDAH 41-42 member committee meeting we're going to have, probably. We may have another, at least in the early term, we may have another one later on as session goes on.
Next Friday.
Next Friday, like I said, the session goes on.
Let's be clear about that. Are we planning to have subcommittee members meet with us on next Friday?
Madam Chair, the plan is next Friday to have a similar meeting like this to go over all the program area budget overviews. That would be next Friday, 8:30 to whenever the Senate meets, either 11:30 or noon.
Thanks.
All right. We're not going to waste time introducing each other, get to know each other on your own time. We don't have a lot of time this session to deal with that, so we're moving forward. First item on the agenda is adoption of rules for Ways and Means. You have that information before you. Madam Co-Chair, you want to have a few remarks on the rules?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The rules that are before you are virtually the same as the Joint Ways and Means Committee has operated under for several sessions. I will call your attention to one addition to the rules, which is in point 5, because I am serving on a subcommittee this session. We need to have a provision that allows the House Vice Chair in my stead to come into that committee if we need the chair, one of the co-chairs, to vote on an element in that committee, in that subcommittee. And so that's what the changes in number 5 do. It allows me to serve on a subcommittee. Other than that, those of you who have served on Ways and Means have seen these rules before. Those of you who are serving on other policy committees are familiar with most of these rules. There are some changes unique to Ways and Means, but it's consistent with the way we've been operating for some years. With that, Mr. Co-Chair, I will move adoption of the rules as presented.
Any objections? Seeing none, so
can I ask a question?
Yes,
I haven't seen these before now, so I was just curious, having not had time to read them, what is the language in here governing the... does a motion need to carry separately on the House side and the Senate side in the subcommittees and in the full committee?
That is correct.
Thank you.
That's correct. Good clarification. Any objections? Seeing none, rules are adopted. The second item on the agenda is appointment of a legislative fiscal officer. Is there a motion to appoint Ken Rocco, legislative fiscal officer?
Cool.
All right, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Any objections? He's done it forever.
You are not allowed to object, Ken.
That's right. So ordered. All right, now we're done the touchy-feely stuff. We're going to talk and pontificate for a couple of minutes so that you understand why you're here and what is expected of you for the next 6 months. Madam Co-Chair, you want to start off?
Yes, thanks. I also want to join Senator Schrader in thanking the members of policy committees who have joined us this morning. I know it's not on your normal schedule, and I appreciate it, but we thought it was important for all legislators who are going to be part of the Ways and Means process to have the same starting point and the same understanding of how the budget works. From my perspective, the work of the Ways and Means Committee, both the full committee and its various subcommittees, revolves around a pretty simple responsibility, and that is that together we're responsible for answering two questions about the services that the state provides to Oregonians, to people who live in Oregon and to businesses that create jobs or create economic value here. And those simple questions are, first, are we doing the right things? And second, are we doing things right? The distinction I make in those two is that, first of all, it's our job to decide whether the services that are supported by public funds are providing the right kinds of services for Oregonians. The legislature has, with Senator Schrader's leadership, and I get to tag on for some of the credit since I'm joining him this year, established a very solid way of evaluating that question. Are we doing the right things? We focus on what are called outcome-based performance measures. You will hear a lot about that term. You will come to use it. It'll roll off your tongue in a few weeks if it doesn't exactly roll off your tongue right now. Outcomes are things that actually change people's lives. We invest in education in order to help people become productive citizens and capable of sustaining themselves and their families. That's the outcome we're interested in. You also need to get involved, and the managers need to get involved in measuring how we do that. How many kids in a classroom? How many days of instruction? How many course offerings does our university system provide? But what Oregonians put their tax dollars forward for is to get the outcomes, and that's what we're trying to help all of us focus on and all of the agencies. Doing the right things, doing things right, is more around whether we're using the best technology to deliver the services that people want, whether we're using the most appropriate training for the staff so that they're competent in the things they do, whether they're using the most efficient methods. So we focus on both of those. I'll also remind us that we are responsible for all publicly funded services, and constitutionally we're responsible for balancing the budget. We spend a lot of time in this building focusing on the general fund. That's the most discretionary money that is available to the legislature to allocate to services. But it's only $14 billion of a $50 billion budget. And I want us not to lose sight of the entire budget. Oregonians get services and their lives are enriched by some of the other investments we make, such as in transportation, the federal funds that we allocate for human services. So let's keep in mind the entire budget and provide our insight and our guidance on the whole thing. We have a lot of work to do, and we have this year lots of talented and busy people helping us do it. In order for us to do things well, I think that means we have to have some expectations of each other. That means we have expectations of you, and that means you have a right to have expectations of us. Some of those should be evident, but I'm going to say them anyway. We provide hearings and meetings to give people information that will inform your decisions and help you make better decisions. We're not doing it just to entertain ourselves or to give Rocco and his staff something to keep them up late nights preparing for. So we want you to come to meetings, and we want you to come on time. We want you to come prepared. The agencies and the legislative fiscal staff will provide background material in advance. And in order to get the most value of the time we have to discuss things, we're going to assume that you've read it and that the meetings will not be time to get information that was provided ahead of time. The meetings will be a time to debate the value of those things or the priorities, and there's going to be plenty of that. I welcome that. If you have to miss all or part of a meeting, we will ask you to catch up offline so that we're respecting the time of the people who were here and not asking them to repeat the same materials twice. The witnesses who come before subcommittees, most of the time witnesses will come before subcommittees, not so much before the full committee, come to bring value to your discussions as well. Whether they are agency representatives, lobbyists, or the general public, they add information to your debate. And I hope it goes without saying that we treat them all with respect. It is perfectly fair to ask for a witness to substantiate a claim that they make. It is not reasonable to berate or deliberately embarrass someone in front of one of your hearings. To the subcommittee chairs, I would ask that you keep the members of your subcommittee informed of what's coming up on your docket and involve them in discussions to form your subcommittee agendas. And members of subcommittees, I'd also ask you to offer the same courtesy to your subcommittee chair. Keep them in the loop on anything that you want to bring forward. And finally, if you need more information either from the legislative fiscal staff or from one of the presenters, agency staff, feel free to ask. The only caution I would make is these people are working really hard to give us good information, timely information, and objective analysis. So please make sure that when you make additional requests, that you are asking for information that will really inform your deliberations or our collective deliberations. And it is not something that is just a curiosity of yours or something to entertain yourselves on a late night when you can't sleep. I think we will have a fabulous process this time. I think the cross-fertilization with policy committees will enrich our process, and we hope it will actually expedite our decisions because we will not have to loop back and forth with the policy committees. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm hopeful that this process will work, too, since half the bloody membership of the legislature is on Ways and Means this go-around. So I hope that what the co-chair says is true and an accurate reflection of the benefits that we'll gain from this. The Speaker and the President, in all their wisdom, are looking upon us to deliver a product with massive subcommittees, so it will really require everyone's respecting one another. I want to give a few what I think are salient points about how this is going to run this session. We are once again revolutionizing how we do budgeting in the state of Oregon. Matter of fact, we are becoming, I think, the first legislature in the nation to take on performance-based budgeting in a way that you will be doing it this coming session. A lot of governors have tried it. It's been done from an executive side, but no legislature has embraced it like this legislature has. It's been a product coming for a bunch of years. Representative Morgan has been instrumental in helping drive this process, as has our Senate Majority Leader and a number of others, trying to talk about how we do business differently here in the state. Historically, prior to last session, the budget process was pretty simple. You had a current service level budget. You rolled up the costs. Different members had a wish list of what they wanted to add. If there was money, you added the stuff. If you got enough votes and politically you were powerful enough, and that was the budget. I'm sure there was maybe some policy behind it, too, at one point. But last session, we did things differently. We tried a phase process where we got the dog and pony shows, the Dick Jane run up the hill, see spot run stuff done in one phase, and then we had a more intense phase where we developed performance measures for the different agencies, had them prioritize every single program within their agency, and then the Ways and Means members, in conjunction with the agency, would review those, agree or disagree about those performance measures or those priorities, and make suggestions. Of course, then the last part of the process was supposed to be a joint work session. That, as you well know, never happened last session. That was a shame. Based on our experience and learning from different sessions, we're going to do things differently this year. And that's the reason I've asked the omnipotent Senate members to know everything already and don't really feel they even need to be here to come to this meeting here today, because we're doing things differently. By that I mean the overviews you're going to get, the only dog and pony show the agencies are going to be allowed to give will be in the next week. Everything you're going to hear is going to be done in the week. As a matter of fact, the agency overviews are going to be done within hopefully a day or two at most, a morning at most. So if you don't know what these agencies are about, you better get to reading like Co-Chair Nolan said. You should become intimately acquainted with the LFO analysis of the governor's budget. That should be the book you read every night going to bed. There's the Bible, then there's the LFO analysis. So, and before any agency's budget is heard, you'll be expected to have read that. And it'll become evident to the sub-chair if you've read that or not. If you haven't read it and you ask ignorant questions, the subchair will gently remind you, as we learned in our touchy-feely Senate retreats, that there's a process check and you all need to go back outside, read your book, and not hold up the work of the committee. We're moving full speed ahead. So what is going to happen in the subcommittees this time? Well, some of it's like it always has been, and I think it's important for the policy people to understand how the hearings go in Ways and Means. The public hearings process, you hear from agencies. These are the presenters. The public will testify at the invitation of the chair, subchair of the committee only. It's not a free-for-all like it is upstairs in the policy committees. Having said that, I think there's a big interest in opening this process up this time, making our budget process a little more transparent. So I'm hoping the subchairs take advantage of that opportunity, work with the co-chairs in developing how they want the hearings to go. And more importantly, we will be having meetings again on the road. It's the intention of the co-chairs to have a co-chairs budget. It'll be done much earlier than it was last session. That budget will be taking you, be the excuse for us to go on the road, to get public input from around the state in a much more open manner, see what the general thoughts are based on what we're hearing from you in the initial phases, what our feelings are based on our analysis of the budget and the whole staff. And that will inform you as subcommittees when it comes time to make your decisions that, whoa, we heard about this in Tillamook or Bend or Klamath Falls, so I don't think we're going to do it the way it's outlined tentatively in the co-chair's budget. That's fine. That's fine. So we're going to try and open this process up considerably. Work session, we're going to try and have work session in Ways and Means means that the subcommittees with the subchairs, working with the co-chairs, have figured out how they want to allocate that money. And you will be given 72 hours at best to review that. That's, of course, a lot more than you usually have. It's better than the hour that we used to give you to look at that. Last session, we tried to give the subcommittee chairs at least 24 hours to review, so they had some ideas. So we're trying to, again, to open this process up, make it more meaningful, make it more understandable. I can't emphasize enough that the subcommittees can be run differently. Rather than have the agency head come in there and talk about all the great, wonderful things they've done and bring little Charlie or little Kurt up there and how they saved his life and turned it around, that's going to be irrelevant to you. The first thing that they're going to be talking to you about when you get into the individual agency budgets, their budget bills, is performance outcomes. Agencies have a list, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 some outcomes, and they'll start with number one. And we'll hear here today from Dawn and others about how that's going to work. And they'll talk about that. You'll review that. They're doing good, bad, or indifferent. Go to item number two, performance measure number two, good, bad, or indifferent. That will be what you'll use to inform yourself about the changes you want to make or not make to the agency budgets. They also have their prioritized list of services that will become important to you, more so than last session. Last session we did not get a chance to use that because of the breakup of the Joint Ways and Means process. The co-chair and I are committed to not allowing that to happen again. Performance measures. Last session we spent a lot of time developing performance measures. We spent a lot of time in the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the summer helping agencies understand what outcomes are. They're different than outputs and inputs, as Representative Nolan, Co-Chair Nolan indicated. And you'll become very familiar with that difference early in session if you're going to be successful. We don't want a lot, we don't want any. Co-Chair Schrader wants no new performance outcomes. Well, that's done. You can't measure performance if you continually change what you're measuring. Now, having said that, I am fully aware that you and some of the agencies will want to change some of those, so I understand that. But the point is, they're going to be minimal. Your emphasis this time as Ways and Means members is going to be to look at the targets. We have done a horrible job, in my humble opinion, in holding agencies accountable for appropriate targets. And the Progress Board and Legislative Fiscal Office and the Budget Management Office have discussed things. We want our targets to be realistic but ambitious. And that's the two things you should be thinking about as you look at these agencies. They come in, yeah, we met our targets, we're great, please give us more money. Well, if the targets were ambitious, yeah, maybe you do. If the targets were like falling off a log, well, maybe you don't. So that's going to be the major new work that this group, this body, is going to be setting the stage for the state of Oregon and showing the rest of the nation how legislators can set those types of targets to help agencies and us succeed. We'll also be talking a little bit about the budget drivers. That's important because every budget has certain budget drivers. You'll have to factor that into decision-making. as you reward these agencies or not. One of the dictums you're going to see is that no policy option package will be accepted by the co-chairs and therefore by you unless they can show how they're affecting in a positive way the outcomes of that agency. I'll repeat that. Policy option packages must be related to the outcomes. More importantly, they should be able to tell you that they're going to improve the current target by a certain percentage by taking that much money out of our budget. $10 million buys you what percent improvement in what particular outcome. That's the level of sophistication that we're going to ask you to pursue in these budgets. And no policy option package will be entertained unless it's framed in that manner. No agency budget will be heard unless that agency brings an element of continuous improvement to the subcommittee. And we'll explain that later. And it's not about just saving money at the expense of quality. It's keeping or improving quality and maybe saving money at the same time. Any agency that doesn't know how to do that will go to the back of the bus, and if we have any money left over, maybe they'll get a budget. So every agency will be set on notice that that's the way things are going to be. The reason you're in Ways and Means is not to hand out candy. This is not about handing out money to your best friends, neighbors, yourself, your district. This is about efficiencies. You're on this committee because you have indicated either an aptitude, welcome, or an inclination to getting the best bang for the buck for the taxpayers in the state of Oregon in any of these budgets, even budgets you have strong feelings and affection for. Sorry, Margaret. To that end, the co-chairs are expecting every subcommittee to come up with 2% reductions in their program area for general fund lottery funds and also other funds. Other fund budgets are not off the hook. Since I'm a kinder, gentler co-chair for all these years and the Senate Majority Leader has beat me into submission, we're going to allow the subcommittees to retain half of those savings that they generate to reallocate as a subcommittee and the subcommittee chair decide of the priorities for that program area. The other 50% will go to the co-chairs for allocation for bigger ticket items that cross individual program lines. There'll be additional opportunities for savings in the subcommittees by looking at those prioritized lists. Those prioritized lists should inform you about what the agency and previous legislature thought were the most important programs and which were the least important. You may or may not agree. That's up to you. If you feel that some of those programs are not as important as maybe some of these new policy option packages, and Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan didn't give you enough money in your program area to do all the things you want to do, you're encouraged to look at those priority lists and eliminate some things and fund some things you think are of higher importance. And you'll be able to do that and retain all that money within your subcommittee and use it again as you see fit based on your public testimony that you're going to be hearing. Lastly, agencies, hopefully, as I said, are coming in with continuous improvement concepts. One of those might be, I want to get rid of a bunch of stupid statutes that the legislature made me use, and I think I can do things a lot more efficiently. I can get better results, improve my outcomes, if you don't make me do this, this, and this. What's great is the policy people sitting in these committees will be hearing this. And since we don't do policy in Ways and Means, we just crunch a few numbers and help our colleagues upstairs look good. We'll be suggesting, hopefully through the Ways and Means process, that maybe, policy people, we should repeal some of these statutes and some of these onerous things that are of very little value given the outcomes that we're now adopting for the 21st century for the state of Oregon. And then the subcommittee, well, frankly not the subcommittee, the agency, if they come up with an idea, will be allowed to use that money as they see fit. We're trying to encourage them, that we're going to reward them for good behavior, good thoughts, ways to run things better, smarter, and keeping quality up there. And this has not been done before. These are somewhat novel concepts. We're not going to start with the governor's budget. Okay, the governor's budget is interesting and informative and helps us, you know, shape maybe some of our thoughts. We're starting with what we call the essential budget level. To a degree, as I said, we're going to be looking for efficiencies. Nothing sacrosanct in there. You'll maybe eliminate some programs that heretofore survived. We're going to start at the essential budget level, not the governor's level. It's a clean slate. You and the individual committees will decide what's going to happen. It's the intention of the co-chairs to build a sustainable budget for the state of Oregon. The co-chairs are somewhat concerned about some of the budgets that have been put forward and whether or not they're actually sustainable. We're not going to spend every dime that comes into the budget in the state of Oregon. It is our intention to set our price of government for that sustainable budget based on the December forecast or general fund lottery funds right now. The March and May forecast are irrelevant to you. March and May forecast, hopefully will be up. That money will be banked. It's our intention to bank that money. If it's down, it's still our intention to try and live by the December forecast. We think there are certain basic needs the state of Oregon has been starved for over the last 5 years as a result of the worst recession in our history that need to be restored. And there are other ways to gain money, and you've heard a lot of them noticed about here during the campaigns and early in session, to make sure we can meet these basic needs for the state of Oregon. What does that mean to you? That means that early in session here, the co-chairs will divvy up the $15 billion in general fund lottery fund monies among the six different program areas, the six different subcommittees, on a tentative basis. It's not biblical, it's not written in stone, it's not the Rosetta Stone. And that will give the sub-chairs and you as committee members a pretty good idea of the shape of your universe and how much you want to give to K-12, higher ed, community college, Oregon Health Sciences University. That'll be largely up to you with consent by the co-chairs. You'll be making those decisions in the light of day. It won't be seven people going in a back room for the last 17 days of the session to figure out what happens. It's our intention that a bunch of the smaller budgets will pass out early. We're not going to hold budgets back. It's our intention to have almost a consent-like process for some of the small boards and commissions so we don't waste a lot of time on those, so you can get to the meat of the issues you and I think the people of the state of Oregon are more concerned about. To get on that type of agenda, they better have pretty good performance. These boards and commissions and smaller agencies have outcomes they have to meet. If they're not doing well, they won't get on that agenda, and they will have to suffer through the onerous process and the gentle interrogation by well-meaning members of Ways and Means. I have always considered it a privilege to be on Ways and Means. I hope everyone here feels that same way. I hope that you conduct yourself in a manner that's befitting of the responsibilities you face on this committee. You face responsibilities like no other, because you have to make tough decisions about things that are not going to happen and tell them to your friends, your colleagues, and worst of all, your lobby. So it's important for you. It's important for you to stand tall. You will have the backing of your subcommittee chairs. To get that backing, you will not broadside your subcommittee chairs. If there's a budget you cannot vote for, you're expected to tell your subcommittee chair well in advance. This is a team sport here. Partisanship is left at the door. We're all in this together. If we do our job right, these budgets should sail through both floors and get the governor's signature without any problem whatsoever. So I'm looking forward to working with everybody. And it should be a great new day, and we've got a lot of great work, and I have a lot of faith in the people that the chair has selected, or the president and speaker has selected. It looks like a really good group. Yes. Entertain a couple of quick comments, and then we'll move into the agenda. Any comments? Senator Devlin, Senator Rogers?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, both co-chairs. A clarification. The 1%, 2%, when you say general funds and other funds, you're including lottery funds on the general fund side of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a clarification.
Yes, sir.
And I'm getting the tape of the record that the 2% stays with the subcommittee chairs.
That's right.
To allocate.
Absolutely.
Okay. You'll note that it was your co-chair who said that.
Senator Berger.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Schrader and Co-Chair Nolan. I want to thank you both for excellent introductions to the process this morning. I especially want to thank Co-Chair Schrader for mentioning the fact that after the field trips, after the hearings, and after it's all done, that I will remain relevant in the process until the very end. And I think that is a difficult task for you with the size of this committee, but I greatly appreciate your effort in that direction.
Thank you.
President Morgan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You refresh my memory. You were talking about which forecast you were going to base your co-chair's budget on.
December.
So, and I also believe I heard you say that if the revenues in the subsequent forecasts increase, that you won't be increasing your budgets, but also that if the revenues in the subsequent forecasts decrease, that you won't be decreasing your budgets. Is that correct?
It depends on the order of magnitude of reductions in the forecast. That is accurate.
So, in the case of if the scenario is that the budget forecasts are decreasing, what's your intention to balance budgets?
Well, we're looking to our revenue committee. This is somewhat similar to what we did last session, although we're in a different position than we were last session. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Very good. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, about 5 minutes, because we've got to reorganize ourselves for the presenters coming in. We're going to use these screens, so we're going to move down to the cheap seats with everybody else and have some fun and relax.
You and I
So we're going to recess for a few minutes here. Move down there. Basically over to our legislative fiscal officer, Ken Rocco, at this point. Oh, that's right. Good point. To get through this information, we're not going to have you ask any questions until the end. So write down your questions. Otherwise, again, with this very abbreviated time frame for overview, we'll never get through the overview. I know you're going to have questions. Please write them down, and we'll give you an opportunity to ask them at the end of each presentation. Mr. Rocco, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to apologize for the configuration of the room. This is the best we could figure out with the number of members that we had to deal with. So we're going to try to present. We'll have a couple of PowerPoint presentations for you, but we'll also have other people not using the screen, and we're going to have them sit up here so that you, because you're all looking this way, so you can see them. Just to give you a quick overview of next week, we provide you with these binders that we hope that you keep with you and bring to the meetings next week. Next week, what we're going to do is have each of the two subcommittees that meet at three times during the day meet together in this room, and you'll be sitting up here. So we'll have the General Government and Natural Resources committees meeting together at 8:30, except for Tuesday when they'll start at 9. Human Services and Transportation Economic Development will meet at 1 and together, and Education and Public Safety will meet together at 3. And we have some items to go through on each of those days, and those have been posted already, and you should have copies of what we're going to discuss in your offices. The binders for the orientation are set up with tabs, and there's a yellow sheet in the front that with sort of an index. Next week you'll be getting additional information from each of the presentations, and if you would like, you can just put them in this binder for future reference. And as we mentioned, then next Friday we're intending to have you all subcommittee members and full committee members back here for a morning session to go over each of the major program areas of the budget. And as Sandra Schrader mentioned, we will be talking about how the budget developed from what the 0507 legislative approved budget was through this essential budget level, which is really created through changes due to inflation, mandated caseload, roll-up costs, and things like that. And we're going to talk about some of those items right now. So that's what our current plan is. The following week, then, you will meet in individual subcommittees at the regular assigned time, and you will have overviews, brief overviews by agencies at that time, and we will get you a schedule for all of those events. So the first thing on today's agenda is basically a review of a very high-level overview of the budget basics for Oregon and a process review. And we're already behind time, so I'm going to go through this relatively quickly. The reason we are asking to hold questions is if you ask a question, we're going to have to repeat the question into the mic because this is airing over the internet, and so we'll have to repeat your question to answer it. So, so to get started, then we have Oregon's budget is based on policy laid out in statute, and as we've been talking about performance measurement, several sections of the statute discuss that the budget is supposed to be based on principles such as measuring program outcomes and progress towards those outcomes, and planning for the short term and long term using consistent assumptions, providing accountability. So the things that we're talking about in performance measurement and outcome-based budgeting have already been built into the state's statutes. As you probably know, Oregon budgets on a biennial basis, which is July 1st of an odd-numbered year through June 30th of the next odd-numbered year. And what this means in terms of the budget is we're often projecting out both revenues and expenditures for 24 to 28 months in advance of when we actually receive them. And this has led to some complications in the budget over the past several years. It's fine when everything's moving in one direction, but if there's a change in direction at some point during that period, then we have adjustments to make. And I think the latest one that you probably are familiar with was in 2002, when we had to go through five special sessions to make those adjustments because of falling revenues. When the legislative session ends, what we call, you're going to hear these terms about the budget, we call that, after the budget is done, the legislatively adopted budget. After that happens, the adjustments can be made to the budget by either the emergency board or the legislature in special session. And as those things happen, then the budget, the term we start using then is the legislatively approved budget because changes have been made to it. Article 9, Section 4 of the Constitution gives the legislature the authority for the budget, and this is the so-called power of the purse part of the Constitution. What it actually says is that no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in pursuance of appropriations made by law. And since you are the only people who can make law, then you are the only people who can tell the state how to spend money. What you're going to be dealing mostly with in Ways and Means are appropriation bills. You can tell what these are because in the House there are 5,000 series bills, in the Senate there are 5,500 series bills. Typically, we switch these from one session to the next. If it was a Senate bill last time, it should be a House bill this time for every agency. Sort of confused that situation a little bit this time because last session, as you may be aware, the Ways and Means Committee split up, and so we had to generate a number of new bills, and we sort of lost track of which one ended up passing. So Oregon has about 100 agencies. The smallest has about a $60,000 biennial budget, and that's the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians. And the largest with over a $10 billion budget is the Department of Human Services. Article, another thing that you need to be aware of in Ways and Means is Article 9, Section 7 of the Constitution, and this limits appropriation bills to state current expenses. So this means that there is no subject matter other than budget language allowed in the bill. And our legislative council has argued many times that that means that nothing can be put in a budget bill outside of the strict appropriation language. Our budget consists of four fund types that you'll be dealing with all session: general fund, lottery funds, other funds, federal funds. Lottery funds is really another type of other funds, but we track it separately because, especially since it's becoming such an important part of the overall budget. We call general fund fungible because it can be used for anything the legislature wants. Lottery funds, by the Constitution, are dedicated to certain things: economic development, education, and parks and salmon habitat restoration. Other funds and federal funds are generally dedicated by law for specific purposes. Other funds are generally fees or other types of things that are charged to users. There's services that state agencies provide, or loan revenues from loan funds and things like that. Other funds and federal funds are another term you'll hear. They're generally put into accounts that are continuously appropriated, which means the other funds' revenues are really, they belong to the agency. They collect them, they put them in an account. What you do is you limit their expenditure of these funds. You tell them that we know that you have $2 million of funds in your account. We're going to limit you to spending only $1.5 million of that, or whatever the budget is determined. We also break other funds and federal funds into what we call limited and non-limited categories. And most of the budget is limited. There are some examples of non-limited items, and you'll see these in subcommittee work. They are generally for programs that you cannot predict accurately the amount of activity that's going to occur. And I think the best example that I know of is unemployment insurance, because you never know exactly how much you have to pay out in unemployment insurance, but you still have to pay it, but you just don't know how much. So we set a non-limited amount in the budget, but it can be changed administratively through the Department of Administrative Services if the agency needs to increase it. And then just some more terminology. What you're going to do is you appropriate general funds, you allocate lottery funds, and as I was explaining, you limit the expenditure of other and federal funds with an expenditure limitation. So these are terms that you will be using in subcommittee work. The Department of Administrative Services does a couple of things by law they're allowed to do. They allot an agency's appropriation or expenditure limitation, and what this is basically a quarterly spending plan that as soon as the budget is adopted, agencies submit to the Department of Administrative Services, laying out how they expect to spend over the next 8 quarters of whatever appropriation or limitation you have given them. And within that, the Department of Administrative Services can, what we call, unschedule a part of that allotment plan, which means they take it away from the agency and don't allow them to spend it. So in many cases, you'll see actions in Ways and Means or the Emergency Board that ask DAS to unschedule a part of the limitation. And that's usually when we have some uncertainty about whether they're actually going to need it or not. So we ask them to unschedule it until it's known whether they really have to spend all of the money or not. In the case of general fund, if it's unscheduled and never spent, then it just reverts to the beginning balance after the end of the biennium. the budget tracks a number of categories, and one of the following presentations you're going to get is going to show you where to find details on these things in the budget binders that you will receive for every agency in front of the subcommittee. But what we call these expenditure categories, and the budget has details on personal service costs, services and supplies costs, special payments, and capital outlay, and also capital improvements and major construction, as well as debt service. And the budget also tracks positions and FTE. FTE stands for full-time equivalent, and basically what it is, it calculates the amount of time a position is on full-time status over the course of the 24-month biennium. So a 1.0 FTE means a full-time worker for 24 months. A 0.5 FTE means could mean a couple of things. It could mean a half-time worker for 24 months, or it could mean a full-time worker for 12 months. So it's just a calculation of the full-time, the amount of months a position actually works. But you will get both. You'll get positions and FTE. And another thing on positions, there's a variety of different kinds of positions. We track permanent, limited duration, seasonal, temporary, part-time. So there is a wide variety of positions. And next week, one of the presentations that you'll receive is going to be on the position system and the classification system that the state has. The appropriation bills that you're going to receive are really the budgetary control. These are put into session law, and so after session's over, they show up in Oregon laws. They are not detailed to those expenditure category levels that I just talked about. They do not show how much an agency can spend in personal services or services and supplies, even though when you talk about those budgets in committee, you have that information before you. The appropriation bill, as you will see, in some cases it just provides a lump sum appropriation to an agency. It may just provide total general fund for the agency to use in whatever program that they have. And that, legally, that is the only control on that agency to spend money. That means that you may have talked about program level budgets in committee, but when the agency actually begins to execute them, they may be able to shift money between those programs. You will see some appropriation bills, and the movement lately has been to provide more detail in appropriation bills, and this is really an accountability measure on agencies, because the more detail in the bill, it restricts their ability to move money between programs without consulting the legislature or the emergency board. The way we communicate information about what you talked about in subcommittee related to an agency's appropriation bills through a budget report. And this is really a sort of a staff measure summary of what the subcommittee and the full committee has done with the agency's budget. It does not have the force of law, but it's a companion to the appropriation bill. And within budget reports, that is where you find any particular budget notes that are provided. And these are basically just directives to an agency on how to execute the budget. And they can sometimes get controversial. So. We always have a lot of discussion about budget notes. And in your rules, there's a description about budget notes. It's Rule 13 when you happen to read more about the rules. And then finally, on the budget basics part, okay, we have three budgetary limits in place in current state law. And these are the revenues in excess of the estimate, which is the kicker law. We do have an appropriations limit that limits the budget to 8% of the projected personal income. There are some exclusions to that. I think the governor's budget is at about 7.754% of projected personal income. And there's also a limit on the number of FTE positions, which is it can't exceed 1.5% of the state population. And as was mentioned, we're going to spend some time looking at drivers to the budget. These are the things that make the essential budget level higher than what you spent in the last budget cycle. And this is a fairly common list of things. This session, I think one of the things we're going to focus more on are the roll-up costs of some of the policy decisions that are in the governor's budget. And then finally, we have two slides just to give you an idea of the process that we're beginning now. There's really two aspects of the budget process. There's the session process, which starts primarily when the governor releases his or her budget on December 1st, and that's the item number one on this. And then this just shows you what happens after that. LFO starts getting some materials together which explains the governor's budget in more detail, and that will be provided to you hopefully early next week. We start making providing information and recommendations on the budget to the co-chairs and leaders. They set the timelines for session. The subcommittees start meeting usually late January, early February. They send the budget bills to the full committee. The final budget details are worked out in middle to late May, and then we adjourn with an adopted budget. And I understand that's going to happen this time in June.
Say it a little more convincingly, please.
Yes.
I understand that will happen sometime in June. And then there's also a two-year cycle that we go through. As soon as the budget is adopted, agencies submit these allotment plans, and this is number one on this chart. Usually in July, August, this time maybe early in July, in August, they will send this eight-quarter allotment plan, their first one, to Department of Administrative Services. And then they update that every quarter with actuals, and then they provide a plan for the remaining part of the year, a two-year cycle. They do this with oversight from the Department of Administrative Services and LFO, and we start then looking at preparing a tentative budget for the next 2 years out. Agencies can make changes to their budget through the emergency board or special sessions if they occur. Then they start preparing a request budget for the next two-year cycle, and this usually happens in March or April of the even-numbered year. They get started on the next cycle. So we're almost always in some kind of budget development activity at the state agency and the budget management and LFO staff. They then submit the agency request budget to the governor, and that usually occurs in August and September of the even-numbered year. And then that is what the governor uses to prepare his or her budget, and then that's what they bring to the legislature. So there is a fairly constantly ongoing process in the overall budget procedures that we do. So that's a very quick, fast, high-level look at the budget process. And I'm sure over the next 4 or 5 months you're going to learn all of this stuff and know it better than we do. So, do you have any questions? If not, we're going to move on to the next item.
Real rapid, Sheila.
And we have Sheila Baker and Darren Hill from Wednesday Fiscal, and they're going to review with you some budget binders. We're going to pass these out to you so that you have some context of what we're talking about. You can't keep these, though, so please leave them here when you leave, because these are going to be used in subcommittees over the next several weeks.
And to help those of you in the seats that are trying to juggle two binders, we're really just going to be working from the example binder for our part of the presentation and not your presentation material binder. So you can set that down if that's easier for you.
Why don't you dive right in, Sheila?
Okay. What we are focusing on during our few minutes is walking you through the agency's governor's recommended budget binder. This is one of three primary sets of written materials that you will have available to you as a resource as you're going through this process. The first has been mentioned already, which is the Legislative Fiscal Office's analysis of the governor's recommended budget. And as Ken said, we hope to have that out early next week for you. This is the agency budget binders, which they prepare, updating their agency request for actions that have happened in the governor's budget process. And the third set of materials that you will have available is agency presentation materials, and Teresa McHugh will talk about those a little later. But our focus is on these agency budget binders. So because of the number of members, some of you will have different binders than others. I'm working from the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. I think there's also one for the Board of Parole and then a couple other agencies as well. I will say straight up that although there is a format for these binders, agencies may get creative, put things in different places, but all the materials should be in there as we're walking through these. And as Ken mentioned, these are actual binders that will be going to the subcommittees, so please don't write in them. Don't rearrange the pages as you're going through if you get bored with what we're saying, because we will be collecting them at the end of this session. Okay, so these budget binders come over here as the agencies get through updating that information, going through the system audits over at Budget Management Division. The binders include agency narrative, budget graphics, and budget and position data system reports. So orbit system, PIC system, those are terms that you will hear. We don't generally refer to these budget binders during the subcommittee meetings, but they are a useful resource both for overview and program detail as you're looking for information on agencies. We do have in your presentation materials for today a copy of the two-page outline that shows where agencies are supposed to put information in these binders, but we'll walk you through these so you get a better sense of what that is. I'll cover the agency narrative and graphics pieces, and then Darren will cover the budget and position data system reports. So if you open your example binder, you'll see there's a table of contents. That should be the first thing. Self-explanatory, I hope. And then there's a certification page, which the agency head or the commission chair signs, indicating that, yes, this is the agency's budget. I don't know how often they got fake budgets in through the system, but that's just a check. The first tab, the next set of information, is called legislative action. So in that section, they should have at least their budget reports from the last session, so you can review what was done during the last session, what their budget looks like, what kind of discussion was had in the various committees. And then if there is any emergency board actions during the interim, they should have a copy of the emergency board minutes in there. Now, some agencies also like to put in a copy of their budget bills or other materials, but basically the requirement is the budget reports from the last session and then any emergency board or, in this case, special session budget reports, any interim legislative action. The next tab is called the agency summary. And for most of the budgets that you have in front of you, this will be the bulk of their document. Smaller agencies put most of the material in this agency summary section. For larger agencies, there will be a lot of material in the agency summary section, but then there will be additional material in their other budget organizational structures, program units, which we'll talk about a little later. But in the agency summary section, the idea is this is to show generally what does a budget look like, what kind of fund type, what's the short history of the agency budget. They need to provide their mission statement, their statutory authority, and discuss their agency plans. They should have a 6-year plan and a 2-year plan that is talked about there. They should describe their programs. What do they do? How do they do it? What are the environmental factors that affect the agency at the current time? What kind of initiatives are they undertaking? As they developed their 2007-09 budget, what were the criteria that they used as they were developing that? Then there's a significant amount of information on performance measures for each agency. There's a table of proposed measures for 2007-09 showing what they're proposing for this go-around in terms of performance measures. For the most part, those will be the same as what was approved by the 2005 legislature, or in some cases what they have worked through with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in the interim. They will have updated their targets and their actuals, and any proposed changes will be indicated on that. There is also an annual performance progress report that each agency will have in their budget binder, and this is done, I believe it was due to budget and management in the fall of last year, and so that reports for the prior fiscal year what they have done in terms of progress reports. Then the next key piece is any information technology and initiatives, major ones. Most of these agencies probably don't have that information in there because they don't have a major technology project or initiative. If the agency is subject to executive orders that the governor has issued regarding sustainability or regulatory streamlining, then there needs to be a discussion of that in this section as well. And there is a consideration, other considerations, other things that they might put in there. Most agencies, somewhere in this section, will have a form that's called a summary of the 2007-09 budget. It's the one that kind of looks like this. So it looks like it might be an automated form, but it's not. Agencies have to fill it out by hand, basically. But it sometimes you'll hear it referred to as a crosswalk. What it does is, for the agency and for each of its budget structures, walk you through where they started with the last legislatively adopted budget, shows any emergency board actions, doesn't explain them, but shows the dollar amounts, shows base budget adjustments, primarily personal services kinds of adjustments that are done as the 2007-09 budget gets built, any essential packages, which are changes to the approved budget rolling forward into the 07-09 biennium for what is called essential budget level kinds of changes, so mandated caseload. So, for example, Oregon Health Plan caseloads, entitlement caseloads, those kinds of things. Inflation, the factors that are set forth by budget management as agencies are preparing their budget. Other kinds of things are shown in those essential packages. And so you get down to an essential budget level for the agency, and then the agency details their program option or policy option packages, which basically are things that are over and above, or in the case of reductions, less than the essential budget level. So it is a handy summary, if you will, of what those numbers are. Again, there's not an explanation per se there. That's elsewhere in the document, but it is a summary of the numbers for you. The next piece of information for each agency is a 10% reduction options. So they are supposed to outline that in their budget document. This time around, most agencies in the governor's budget are not looking at having reductions taken. Some of them are, however, and so you can look at those reductions options relative to what's happened in the governor's budget. Then there are organization charts that are supposed to be in there, both for the current biennium, and if there's changes proposed in the 07-09 budget, those are supposed to be presented as well and highlighted on the organizational chart.
The next thing you're going to find in here are some reports that are generated by ORBITS. And ORBITS is the Oregon Budget Information Tracking System. It's a statewide budget system. Where information gets entered into so that we have a statewide repository. We can report on all agencies and those kinds of things. So these reports are actually officially coming out of the system itself. The first one has a whole bunch of detail in here. And again, you have to realize that as analysts, we use these in a different way than you might. So this first report is very detailed, but it does go through and it breaks down the budget much in the same way as the categories that Kim laid out earlier. And it goes through. If you wanted to look at probably the most meaningful portion of this at the very end of this first report here, which is called the Agency-Wide Appropriated Fund Group, there's a section that's called Total Budget. And it says Total Budget Excluding Packages, Total Budget, and it goes down and it lists each one of the packages. The nice part about these reports is it's kind of nice to be able to go back and see what did the agency have back in 03-05 for their actuals, what was their adopted budget for the current biennium, and then what is in the governor's budget being proposed for the next biennium. So it's kind of nice to be able to do a time comparison. In this first tab, there are basically two reports. There's the one that I just talked about. There's also another one called the Agency-Wide Program Unit Summary. Most of the agencies that you have, in fact, I think all of the agencies that are in these examples, only have one program unit. When you start getting into some of the larger agencies like DHS, these binders are going to be very thick, but you would also see a summary, which is kind of nice here, of each one of the programs, and, again, that time comparison. And we'll be some more detail. We'll start breaking this information down a little bit further in the next couple of tabs.
Okay, moving quickly on to the next tab. This is the revenue section. There's a narrative there that talks about what the agency's revenues are, sources. If there's any particular kind of trends that are noteworthy, they will discuss those there. If there's a proposed fee or license or assessment increase, that information is supposed to be in this tab as well. I don't know if those are in our example documents or not, but if the agency has a fee bill in, then there would be information related to this in the budget binder.
And here again we have, there's actually two reports in here. One is a detail of lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds revenues. Obviously, if they're a general funded agency, there won't be any. And the more meaningful report is probably the one that's after that. It's called the Agency-Wide Revenues and Disbursement Summary. We now start getting into really breaking down the budget. You're starting to see line items within categories. So within other funds, you can see the beginning balances. You can start to see the different kinds of revenue sources that are going in and out of the agency. And the nice part about this is it also shows ending balances. So you can start to see on some of the other funded agencies how much money are they carrying forward from biennium to biennium.
Okay, next tab is program units, and as mentioned, most of these agencies that you have are just one single program unit, so there won't be a lot of additional detail in here, but there will be a description of the program, if you will, and more description of those essential budget level packages. So the inflation, the if they have mandated caseload, if there's programs phasing in or out, those things should be described in this section. There should be organization charts and narrative relative. Again, if this is more than a single program unit agency, there would be much more detail in terms of each of the budget structures in this particular section.
And again, now being under each one of these programs, there will be as many as an agency has. So some agencies have one, some of them have 10. So the nice part about the reports that are included in here is, again, we're breaking down into more detail. You can start seeing line items for each one of the packages, all of the essential packages, all of the policy packages, and some totals there. And then as you get to some of the agencies actually put the reports in with each one of the packages. There's a narrative description of each package. They go ahead and include it. Some agencies go ahead and put all of the Orbitz reports in the very back together. But what you're also seeing here now is a summary report. Again, the Program Unit Appropriated Fund Group, if you looked back, it looks very much like the report that was at the agency-wide level. And for the most part, it is that exact same report. It has a little more detail in it because it starts breaking stuff down into budget categories, services and supplies, personal services, those kinds of things. And from there is... Again, just a little more detail in here. You're starting to see positions and FTEs, but this is, again, at the cross-reference level, what we call the program unit level. And for the examples you have, the agency-wide one happens to match these because there's only one program unit in each agency.
Now, I don't believe that most of you have this in your binders, but in some agencies, they will have a capital budgeting section, which includes, as Ken presented, things in terms of any financing agreements or certificates of participations that are used for capital expenditures, capital improvement projects, information on capital construction, if there is any of that. They will have narrative related to that. They will have schedules. They will have budget system reports. If they have capital construction, there is to be a six-year plan that's included and a summary of that plan, as well as individual project narratives, so that when we're looking at what those capital requests are, we can get the detailed information. For example, in Department of Human Services, there will be capital construction related to the Oregon State Hospital replacement. For corrections, there may be some capital expenditures related to prison facilities. So as those agencies have capital needs, they will be in a separate section in the budget document. So if you're looking particularly for that in an agency, it's easy to find. Then the next section that all agencies will have is called special reports, and this is sort of a hodgepodge or an appendix of additional information. It includes for some agencies more detail on information technology projects, or if they have a facility proposal that affects the workspace, that information is in this section. All agencies should have something about audits response, so if Secretary of State has done an audit on the agency during the interim, they need to provide information on what their response to that audit was. And each agency has an affirmative action report that's required to be included in the budget document. So that is here as well.
And then back here, there's some more summary kinds of reports. There's also some more detailed information. Specifically out of the Orbitz system, there's a list of all of the packages by program. So if you ever wanted to see how many policy packages they have on an agency-wide basis, that's there. The next report goes through and it actually shows just the policy packages and shows the priority of each one of those policy packages. Again, a summary information. Then after that is the first place where you actually see all of the detail, both revenues and expenditures. You've got all of the detailed accounts. You have all of the categories and some summary information by category. This is where you get a lot of useful information all in one place instead of going through three or four places in here. This is kind of the overall report that has all the detail. what I'd like to mention while I'm thinking about it is these reports, I could spend an hour going through each one of these reports and explaining the information that's in there. What if you have questions of how do these work or what does something mean on here, feel free to contact your legislative fiscal needs. We've worked with these for years and we can help you get through that. As you go through here, there is again some of the reports from a higher level that we looked at agency-wide. Now we've got them down here at a little bit lower level. The way these reports work is it starts at the agency level and then works through each one of the programs. There are also some PICS reports. PICS is the Position Information Control System. It's the counterpart to the budget system. It's the position, so every position that's in the state, except for higher education, are detailed listed in there. And so there's some reports in here that go through. The PICS reports tend to focus on the positions that are in packages, but there are some summaries in here, so if you wanted to know how many office specialist twos there are in this particular agency, they'll have that information in here. There's also some salary information based upon the budgeted rate attributed to each position.
So, in summary, we just covered a lot of material in a very short time. I think the bottom line is these binders will be available as agencies reconcile to their governor's budget. The information will come over here. It's available to you if you want to do some research on it, or if your staff wants to talk with the legislative fiscal analyst to find out particular pieces of information, we may refer you to this. But it is a resource that's available to you, and if you have questions on either the narrative or the system reports that Darren walked through, give us a call. And then we'll collect the binders because these agencies will kill us if we use their binders before the hearings.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you, Darren.
For the next section, we're going to catch up a little bit on the time since we've fallen a bit behind. But I want everyone here to meet. Teresa, could you come over where people can see you? Teresa McHugh is the Deputy Legislative Fiscal Officer, and she is the person who is your point person for issues around Teresa McHugh.
I can't see you in the back.
Point person for presentations and information before subcommittees and the full committee. She has put together actually a very good summary of what the presentations that will be made, the directions we've given to the agencies for presentations to us. It is tab number 5 in your orientation book. And rather than have her read it to you, I'm going to send you home with homework and ask you to read it yourself. But Teresa, if you could just emphasize for 2 minutes, outcomes-based performance measures.
It does. It just switches it around in terms of order and where focus is. Instructions have gone out to agencies as well. Some of them may have questions, and I think it's probably worth noting that the co-chairs are going to meet with agency, so the larger agency heads next Tuesday at their regular meeting to kind of go through what the intent is. So agencies should be well prepared as well, and your analysts can help you through it as well.
The major point from this is when agencies tell you that they don't understand and they never saw this before, they are lying. They've got this information the same as you. So that's not an excuse for not presenting the information exactly as we told you at the outset that how we're going to be dealing with this information. I know all the agencies will be very congenial and more than willing to give you the information you need. Moving on. Susie Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next section is on prioritization, which is under tab 6 in your orientation notebooks. Senator Schrader mentioned in his opening remarks that this was an important part of the process to facilitate balancing the budget. Does provide a measure of impartiality. And initially, we started this process by asking agencies to just provide us a list of their priorities without standardizing how that was presented to the Ways and Means Committee, which didn't help us as well as we would have liked it to. So we have now standardized that to ensure that the data is provided in a consistent format. And the information that we require from the agencies is to summarize the information for each activity that they perform within their program areas, where the purpose and statutory authority come from for that activity, the cost and source of funds, the number of positions, the affected constituency, and expected results or performance measures, so that you can marry up the information all in one place. And then we ask agencies to provide an initial prioritization from their perspective, and an by program area, and then for the agency as a whole, and document the criteria that they use to establish those priorities. The subcommittee chairs will be working with co-chairs to establish a process and criteria for ranking the programs and services of each agency, which they'll have to do in the next week, since that process starts immediately thereafter. And after establishing preliminary priorities in the subcommittee meetings, then the citizens and departments will be provided an opportunity to provide comments. We plan to publish those priorities that have been established by the subcommittee on our website, so that the public will have wider access to that information. And subcommittees will finalize the prioritization and use those results to inform their final decisions for the budgets. Paul's going to talk about the forms themselves and the instructions to kind of familiarize you with how we use that in subcommittee.
I'll briefly walk you through the form that you also have under tab 6. The form that you have is a page that would be the department-wide priorities. If the agency has more than one program unit, there would be a separate sheet for each program unit with prioritizations under the for each program unit. This page would have all the programs for the department and in prioritized order. And that's what you would see in column 1 and 2. Column 3 is for just the initials of the department. In case these were sorted and combined, you could track the agency that has responsibility for the program. Then a short initial for the program. Column 5 is the program unit or activity description. This should be a short description, but the standard that I've used is, if you handed this to someone who didn't really know anything about the agency, would they be able to understand what the program does? And I think that's especially important this time, since we're going to be publishing these, that folks have an ability to really understand. So minimize the use of acronyms and jargon, and just use plain language and explain what the program does. Column 6 is would identify any key performance measures that are related to the program. This will be a useful tool as you go through agencies and their programs to see, look for gaps. If there is, you know, a large program with significant amount of money and a number of positions, but they don't seem to be tied to key performance measure, first question what I want to ask is, how are they measuring progress and success? It's likely they have some other measures that they may just not report as a key performance measure that they can use to inform you about how the program's doing. And as a last resort, since we are trying to keep changes to a minimum, you could consider adding a key performance measure for a program that doesn't have one now, or ask that they develop a measure that they would track internally and report to the next legislature on what the success and the program is. Columns 6, 7, and 8 are areas where you can use the governor's principles are supposed to be, the relevant governor's principles are supposed to be included, and 9 is the primary purpose, and you'll see a list of those at the bottom of the sheet, what would go in those columns, the code for each. So, for example, this would be useful if you wanted to combine all the programs that are tied to civil justice. You could combine them all and sort them on just the one item, and you could see all the programs that are related to that area. Starting with 10, you would see the funding mix for the program. It's general fund, lottery funds, other funds, non-limited other funds, which, as Ken explained, is the legislature does not spend an expenditure limitation for. Oftentimes these are debt service or programs like unemployment insurance that are paid out, and we don't limit the expenditures. Federal funds, and the same for non-limited federal funds. And there's a column for total funds. Finally, you would see the number of positions for the program and the number of full-time equivalents. The second to the last column, 19, is a 10% reduction in the GRB. So if the agency has identified a reduction as part of their 10% reduction list that affects that program, they need to check yes or no there. So if they have a reduction that they've identified in the GRB, they need to put a yes if it affects that program. This can be useful because if you see yes for some high priority programs that are at the very top, there's a couple questions you could ask. One is, it's likely that there must be some efficiencies there to take, because if it's such a high level and high importance to the agency, they wouldn't be offering up a reduction unless it's realistic, hopefully. And the other thing to look at is if they are what's sometimes referred to as the Washington Monument trick, where you put a reduction on your most popular program because you know that will never be taken. If that's the case, then you can always ask, well, maybe you should come up with some other reduction options for us to consider, since these are really wouldn't be acceptable to us. So I think that there's some useful kind of triggers and keys you can use when looking at this as you do your work. And of course, we're available and LFO staff are available to help you if you have any questions. The agencies are willing to work if you have any feedback on what it is. And of course, the subcommittee, you'll be looking at how the agency prioritized and then considering how the subcommittee would want to maybe reprioritize the agency's programs.
Questions? This sheet is probably one of the most important summary sheets you'll have available to you to get a quick, dirty, and very good look at what's going on in that budget. So I would urge you to get familiar with it as you go through the process.
And just one last thing, Susie pointed out, on the back side of the sheet you were just looking at, you'll see also, you will see the detail of the 10% reductions in the GRB, so that you'll have it all in one place in the form. You would see what the details of the reductions that they're offering out there.
Thank you very much. Well, we're picking up steam here now. All right. This is not to diminish the value of all the information you've gotten so far, but this next piece is very, very, very important for senior members as well as the new members, because this helps set the stage for how you're going to use the performance data to inform yourselves about the relative success or lack thereof in these various programs. Dawn is a new acquisition to our office, has a lot of experience, and we're very fortunate to have her. We're going to lean on her very heavily, and you can too as members, to help understand what outcomes are. We're even going to have, I think, a short video about how things have been done in Washington. Is that correct?
Next Friday.
Next Friday you'll get a video. So you get to hear it here. It'll mean little or nothing to you because you haven't had a chance to get into budgets or hear much. We're going to present how it actually has been working in Washington State, so you can see this is not just something we dreamed up on the fly that has no chance at all of being useful to you. So we'll be able to present it hopefully in real life form. And then, as I said earlier, I think we are going to come back probably somewhere mid-session, maybe review some of this information after you've had a chance to chew on it, and then you'll be able to ask better questions, hopefully lead us to a better process during the next legislative session as we go down this performance budgeting road.
Okay. Well, we're getting queued up here. You have behind tab 7 the copy of the slides, and some attachments we'll be walking through. I do want to introduce Rita Conrad from the Oregon Progress Board. She's the Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board. The first thing we'll be talking about is sort of how the key performance measurement system actually got started, and the Oregon science process and Oregon benchmarks, because they are related. And Rita Conrad's going to give some orientation to that. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to spend the bulk of our time actually talking about how do you use this key performance measurement information as part of the budget process. What does this mean for you, and what's the work that you'll actually be doing using key performance measures? Then at the very end, we're going to spend a little bit of time orienting you more specifically to the materials that support the process. How to read the materials, what to look for, because it can look like a lot of paper. So I was hoping I could give you sort of the inside, what you might be paying attention to as you look at the forms. So I'm going to turn it right over to Rita, and she's going to go ahead and give you this piece about how the key performance measures link to the Oregon Shines and benchmarks.
You're probably wondering why in the world a performance measure would link to Oregon Shines. So I'll go through quickly in a minute what Oregon Chimes is and why it's logical to do that. But this whole thing started with House Bill 3358 in 2001, which directed the Progress Board to create guidelines that do that, that help Oregon state agencies link their work to Oregon Chimes, which is, as I'll explain in a minute, the state's kind of overarching 35,000-foot shared vision and goals. And so we created those guidelines with the help of an outside advisory committee made up of experts from outside. Dick Tracy, for example, who sits on the Governmental Accounting Standards Boards, was on that group, agency heads, legislators. And so the guidelines came out of that process. But the interesting thing is the guidelines didn't just address the measures from agencies that link to Oregon Chimes and the benchmarks. They also address all measures, all key performance measures, even those measures that may not link to Oregon Chimes and the benchmarks, and there are quite a few of those. Then later, in ORS 291, establishes the roles and expectations for the ongoing management of House Bill 3358. Next slide, please. So let me talk a little bit about Oregon Chimes. Oregon was the first state in the entire nation, as far as we know, that created a big picture, statewide, not just government, statewide vision for the state's future. Oregon Chimes 1 was created in 1989 as part of a kind of an economic recovery look or plan when Oregon was coming out of that big recession in the 1980s. And it established a, pretty much a consensus that Oregon's economy needed to move from a resource-based economy gradually to more of a knowledge-based economy to help assure that Oregon could compete globally in the 21st century. Oregon Chimes 2, there was a mandated, the Oregon Chimes is mandated to be updated every 8 years. And in 1997, Oregon Chimes 2 process happened. It involved a lot of public hearings, a lot of input from Oregon citizens and civic leaders. It reaffirmed the notion that we needed to move more towards a knowledge-based economy instead of relying so heavily on a resource-based economy. And it also found that we were making quite a bit of success in that area, but many families were being left behind. And then Oregon Chimes 3 is about to come into being. We're probably going to launch that in 2007 with an estimated time of arrival of 2009 to coincide with the sesquicentennial 150th birthday celebration of Oregon. So the Oregon Progress Board very quickly was created to kind of shepherd this process, to periodically update the vision, to track Oregon's progress with Oregon benchmarks towards that vision, and to help Oregonians work towards the vision. And that's where the link to benchmarks come, to performance measures come in, because state government is one of those 400-pound gorilla partners in Oregon that work towards the Oregon Chimes goals and the benchmarks. And so part of our work, since we sit in state government, is to help state government align with that plan and with those measures. As we get into Oregon Chimes 3, the legislature, of course, being a part of state government, is a huge partner in working towards these goals. And we'll want to ask the legislature to be intimately involved with that process in setting the benchmarks, setting the benchmark targets, and talking about the trends that affect Oregon. So this is a graphic of how all of it kind of fits together. You can see the Oregon Chimes vision as it now states is a prosperous Oregon that excels in all spheres of life, and that basically refers to economy, community, environment. The three goals of Oregon Chimes are up there. I think my mic is going in and out. Can you hear me all right? Oh, sorry. The three goals of Oregon Chimes correspond roughly to economy, community, and environment. So goal one is quality jobs for all Oregonians. That means we need to have a robust economy that can compete in the global economy. Goal two is safe, caring, and engaged communities. That's where we get into civic engagement, social support, health and basic needs, public safety. Goal three is about environment, both the built and the natural environment. So it gets into community development and the natural environment, the species, air water, land, all of those benchmarks are in there. And by the way, there's a stack up here if you're interested. I brought a stack of all 91 Oregon benchmarks, kind of on one 11 by 17 folded and punched. So if you want to stick it into your notebook, you're welcome to do that. We kind of view this as an altitude and an alignment issue. Oregon Shines, if I had to sum up why Oregon Shines is important, I'd say the word focus. It helps to focus the partners, giving them a broad general idea of what our shared goals and vision are for the state of Oregon. And that's kind of at the 30,000 feet level, altitude level. The agencies, state agencies, state government, even partners outside of government, business, nonprofits, conceptually they're kind of at the 20,000 foot level where they're working and their work can be measured and aligned with the goals and the benchmarks. The benchmarks exist to measure Oregon's progress towards the Oregon Shines goals. So that's the connection. In the back, the very back of tab 7 in your notebooks, the end of the slideshow piece, you'll see a legislative background brief that Don and I put together that explains Oregon's system for measuring results. And it talks about the different altitudes of measures at 30,000, 20,000, and even 10,000 feet. And one other thing I wanted to mention, especially for Senator Schrader, we're putting together, as we did last year, a crosswalk for Ways and Means subcommittees that shows the relationship between the key performance measures that agencies submit and the Oregon benchmarks. So it'll display what agencies are linking to which benchmarks, and it side-by-side displays the benchmark chart with an agency table of agency measures and whether they're how they're doing on their targets. I have a sample still in draft form. It should be ready by February 1. And we'll have one packet like this for each subcommittee. And so we'll get that to you as soon as we can.
Great. Thank you, Rita.
Okay, thanks, Rita. We're going to go ahead now and move into the part two of the discussion, which is about how do we make performance measures meaningful for the process you're about to enter. I think the first thing we need to do is step back and ask ourselves, why do we care about performance measures to begin with? And I think it's important to recognize there are three primary reasons why performance measures become a tool. The first is they create a shared performance expectation. When you talk about a measure and you talk about a target, you're getting on the same page about what's expected. So that's a shared performance expectation. You can create increased accountability. Once you know what it is you're measuring, what it is you're driving towards in terms of a target, you can actually begin to manage to something, okay? And then you can have discussions around, hey, are we accountable to that or not? The final reason is the whole piece about motivation. We all know that what gets measured gets done. So it really helps keep people focused on what we think might be the most important work of an organization. This slide kind of brings in the concept of a sequencing of measures. You heard Senator Schrader talk about we need outcome-oriented measures. I think that's right. I think from where you sit, you want to know what is the ultimate result or what is an intermediate outcome of the work of the agencies. On the ground, though, agencies do care about output. So I think it's important to understand the sequencing of measures, that we may have an input that's number of employees that actually produce a function of an output, which is the number of permits issued, for example, in the air quality program at DEQ. We care about permits. You know, why are they important? They're important so that we have some degree of control over compliance with air quality standards. So we might measure percent of compliance with air quality standards. This would give us an intermediate outcome that might be meaningful both to the agency or the program and to a body such as yourself. But ultimately, what citizens want to know about, and I think what we all want to know about, is the air getting cleaner and has risk been reduced
know, to citizens as a result of these efforts. So percent of risk of air pollutants happens to be one of the Oregon benchmarks that Rita has been talking about. It's a new benchmark. So this is how it might be that a key performance measure might link to a Oregon benchmark. They may measure number of outputs, number of permits as an output. That might be where they started. But again, we want to drive them towards thinking, why do permits matter? What might be the next level of measure? What would be the outcome that matters? Percent of compliance with air quality standards is an example. That is not a DQ measure right now, but that is an example. So let me give you another example about this orientation. How do we shift from outputs, which is kind of where agencies like to focus, to more of an outcome orientation? And I'm going to talk about the Judicial Department. The Judicial Department has an issue. Individuals are coming to the circuit courts without representation and proper paperwork. So what does that have to do with anything? Well, there's consequences of that. The consequences are that there's more court and judge time involved in those cases, that there's multiple and inaccurate filings, that the litigants themselves are angry because they don't get the system and they're trying to do the right thing and they have to keep coming back and coming back and coming back. And overall, I think we can all agree that just costs more, having all of those inefficiencies in the system. So the Judicial Department came up with a solution, and I think we're really good in state government at coming up with solutions. And they created the Family Law Facilitation Services Program. And that program provides assistance, information, and legal referrals to folks that don't have access to resources for proper or for other types of representation. So they came to this body in 2003-2005 with a key performance measure that was legislatively approved and still exists today, which is percent of courts with facilitation services. What does that tell you about the program itself? Not much. Okay, it's not necessarily very meaningful in informing on whether we're achieving the outcomes that, you know, address the problems in the first place, or that address the issues and concerns of the people that aren't being appropriately represented. But it's an important measure to them as they're beginning to launch a new program. They want to get widespread support. They want every court system to have this program, and they didn't when they started. So it was a good management tool for them to be paying attention to this. But this is a really good, I think, example of something that might have, you know, been important as an output measure, but we really have the opportunity through this process to drive it to being more outcome-oriented. So they're actually proposing in the 07-09 process, which we're about to begin here, a new measure, which is percent of litigants satisfied with the services. So in this case, what they're looking to do is to take, again, if this is a service or quality measure, they're trying to say, are we making a difference in terms of the people that are not, you know, that need these services? Are they meaningful for them? Are they getting adequate representation? While this may not be the best outcome measure, it's something that they can readily control in terms of gathering data. It's something they care about. They want a quality program. But they also recognize that there are other levels of outcome that they need to be paying attention to, which is the problem that originated all of this being solved as a result of our efforts? Do we have a reduction in the number of rescheduled cases, which is, of course, one of those consequences? Are we getting better judgments? So all of this investment exists so that they accomplish those two things. And they are working on actually trying to develop performance measures that inform on those two things. The challenge, of course, is the data systems, having the data systems to support the information that they want. So this slide here is really just, again, we've seen inputs, outputs, intermediate outcomes, high-level outcomes. The idea here is there are different kinds of measures. There's efficiency and productivity measures, number of employee hours per permit issued, service quality, permits issued in a timely fashion. These are things we may care about. Are they outputs? Are they outcomes? We can debate that for a really long time. But what I really want to just introduce with this is that there are different kinds of measures, and that the key performance measure system still has some outputs. It's working toward towards being more outcome oriented. There are efficiency measures, there's service quality measures. There are some cost effectiveness measures. This is an area where I think there's also opportunity, and these tend to be more outcome oriented, which is to really be able to tell the story, what does it cost per improvement in air quality? If we want to get that percentage of risk reduced by 1%, how much do we need to invest? Those are really hard questions to ask. You have to have a really good data system that links your inputs to your, you know, outputs to your outcomes all the way along this chain. Some agencies are doing this. I think this is the direction that agencies are working towards, but it is a challenge. Okay, this slide, I'm going to jump us up to a higher level again. When we talk about performance measures and the key performance measure system, that's one lens into agency performance overall. If you want effective performance management, if you want a good management system that allows for continuous improvement, there are more processes besides the performance measurement process that supports that. You need a planning process, something that tells you these are our priorities for this agency. You need business processes that are efficient and effective, that tell you on the ground what it is you're to accomplish and how you work towards that. And you need performance measurement systems that allow you to check your progress along the way, and then you need to actually adjust. You need to make changes to improve your progress towards a result, to have a continuous improvement effort within an organization. So if you're not liking what you're seeing in terms of key performance measures, you might want to step back a little bit and ask yourself the question, what is the institutionalization of some of these other processes? Because they contribute and they link to each other. If you don't have a very solid planning process, your performance measures aren't going to be as rigorous. They're not going to be as effective. They're not going to be as outcome-oriented. And if you don't have efficient and effective business processes, that brings other problems, etc. So that's the point that this slide tries to make. As you heard Representative Nolan say earlier today, there are two key questions that we will continue to encourage you to ask yourself, and that is, are the agencies doing the right things, and are they doing things right? Doing the right things might be the bigger policy question, or it might be, are they effectively aligning their performance measures to their agency mission, to their statutory requirements, to their high-level goals, to benchmarks where appropriate. Doing things right has a lot to do with, you know, what is the performance expectation? Are they, you know, some of those efficiency measures come into that as well. There's lots of sub-questions you can answer underneath each of these larger two questions, but if you can remember to ask those two questions, are they doing the right things? Are they doing things right? That's what performance measures helps you understand. I just want to give a quick example on the ground about how this works. I talk about LUBA, and all your examples have to do with LUBA, not because I think LUBA is the most, the best agency. It's because I have a budget, and they're my budget. So I have all the materials in front of me is why you get LUBA. But LUBA has a mission, Land Use Board of Appeals, and they were created to provide access form for resolving land use disputes quickly and efficiently, and to make those decisions available. So they created this expertise around the review of land use appeals. One of their performance measures, and this is what you get to do, as Senator Schrader said, you get to look at each performance measure. Their first performance measures is the percent of land use appeals resolved within statutory required timelines. So it has to do with processing timeliness. This is a quality measure. So what does this tell you? Are they doing the right work here? Paying attention to timeliness is part of their mission. It's required as part of statute. So the fact that they're talking about this and reporting on timeliness is somewhat important, I think. And they have had problems in the past. In the late 1990s, early 2000s, they had a significant backlog issue and they weren't delivering on their statutory requirements. So in that instance, it becomes much more meaningful to be paying attention to those kinds of things. Are they doing things right? I wanted to go back to this. Are they doing the right work? Are they working right? Okay, that's the second measure. I keep moving closer to the mic. I'm sorry. This has a lot to do with looking at performance itself. When you look at this graph, you see a target line at 90%, and you see a series of data points over time. It had sort of a rise in the year 2003 and a bit of a decline, but it's been holding steady around the target. And I think, you know, from my perspective and in talking with them, my question is the performance appropriate? Well, they're close to their target within a few percentage points, and they can tell you specifically why they've had some challenges, and they've only been at 85% and 90%. But I think it's also the opportunity to step back, as Senator Schrader said, and ask yourself, is the target of 90% the right target? And they have their reasons for why it's 90%. They tell you that it has to do with some cases being extremely complex, has to do with turnover. There's only 6 FTA in this agency, 3 attorneys and a staff attorney, 3 board members and a staff attorney processing cases. So they can tell you their story about why they think 90% is an effective target or not. And then you can ask the questions even, well, what would it take to increase this target? And have those kinds of discussions. Because sometimes the incremental improvement to get to 95%, the cost for that and the benefit for that make it not necessarily the best decision. But you can begin to have some of those conversations. That's the idea around looking at targets and talking about what is an appropriate performance level. So I just breezed through a bunch of information. And as Senator Schrader said, I am a resource that's available within the Legislative Fiscal Office. I can come back and talk more about the nuts and bolts of how you do this work if that would be helpful to you. But I do want to also touch a little bit on the work itself, the process, the forms, because there's a whole infrastructure that supports you being able to do the things we've just been talking about. And I want to have you have enough familiarity that you can come back to me and ask additional questions, and so that you can find the nuggets in the information you're going to be getting. So this is just a large-scale view of the process. The thing about this process that gets people sideways sometimes is that you're going to have an annual report that you're going to be looking at for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2006. And that is for fiscal year 03-05. So those were the legislatively approved measures from the last session.
The fiscal year, just if I could, the report that came out September 30th, 2006, that's for fiscal year 05-06, and those are the 05-07 legislatively adopted performance measures.
Okay, that's what I meant. I don't know what I said. Forgive me. So, yes, and you're going to have before you a form that's going to be from the agency saying, this is what I want for 07-09. So it's going to be a little bit of a disconnect. So I just want you to be aware of that. You're also going to have in front of you what we call a criteria review, which this is, I think, one of the things that makes the system, the Oregon's Key Performance System, so effective, is through the guidelines, there are 8 standards with which we evaluate all requests for new key performance measures. And that creates quality within the system itself. And they're nationally recognized standards. They're not things that Rita happens to like or other people happen to like. These are things that nationally folks that are smarter than all of us probably say are, this is what makes a good performance measure. So those criteria review forms, the 8 things that we've been talking about are alignment. Okay, we've talked a lot about the piece about alignment already. Are we doing the right work? This is, do the measures tell the story of the mission goals? Do they link to Oregon benchmarks appropriately, et cetera? Are they focused? Do the key performance measures focus on a few? I mean, if I wanted to know everything about an organization like DHS, I might have 150 key performance measures. That's way too many for you in an oversight function to be able to weed through and make sense of. So we've really encouraged agencies to pick the priority work, focus on the core functions, pick things that are going to be stable over time, because as Senator Schrader says, we don't want to change these every biennium, because it takes, when you start talking about outcome-oriented indicators, sometimes it takes time to see trends. And if you change them all the time, you can't do that. So focusing on a few. The GASB conformity has to do with just making sure we all, when we say output, we mean the same thing. When we say outcome, it's getting some standardization in concept and in definitions. Targets, again, ambitious but realistic, and there's, you know, targets is more of an art than a science, and it is kind of a process. Oftentimes, it's really best negotiated with the agency. And so I think, you know, the idea is the targets do represent ambitious but realistic milestones to be achieved by the agency. Five is data accuracy. Again, we haven't had the resources to do any auditing of the data that agencies are putting forward. That's something I get to develop in the interim. But we make sure that every agency tells us how they're tracking the key performance measure and what their information sources are. So we at least have the beginning framework to do some auditing of data. Measurement ownership, you know, you can't have one person centralized to do the measurement if they live within an organization. You need to have the person that cares about the what the measure tells you owning that measure. And so we ask that agencies list that person, and that will be in the forms. We have a new customer service measure that's standardized across all state agencies. This came in the last biennium. We've made sure that every agency has incorporated it and incorporated it according to the guidelines they've been given, actually by the legislature and implemented through Department of Administrative Services. And comparisons. It's like you can look at yourself and you can say we're improving over time. Is that meaningful? Well, yeah. But if you really want to know if you're doing the best job you can be doing, you need to find someone else doing the same work and compare you to them and see, well, if they're at 90% of efficiency and you're only at, you know, 60, but you used to be at 30, so you're thinking you're doing pretty good, are you really doing the best that you can do if the industry standard is 90% and you're at 60%? So you have to have, you have to introduce that notion of comparison. So I am going to just quickly go through forms. You have every single one of these forms in your attachments, so you can look at them. I know they're small on the screen. They're cut and pasted components. But this, I want to orient you to what you might be paying attention to when you look at these forms. The criteria review form. There's eight of them. We just talked about them. On the left-hand margin, there's a yes or a no. We really tried to work with agencies to get them all to yeses. We've been doing this for a while. They kind of know what's expected of them. So we want to give them the opportunity to align what they bring forward as their proposed key performance measures for 07-09 to the criteria. Well, in some cases, issues surfaced. And issues surfaced in the discussion between legislative, fiscal, and budget management, and with sometimes input from the Progress Board as well. These were the folks that did the criteria review. And we weren't able to resolve all those issues. So there might be a no in the left-hand margin. Now, no doesn't mean that the agencies are doing something bad. They worry that that's what you all are going to think, is that if there's a no there, that they're going to get in trouble for that. But a no is really intended to flag this issue, to make sure we talk about it, because we're not all on the same page. And it's important to get the legislative direction about what is, and most of these fall in the target area, just to give you that heads up. So the other materials you'll have in front of you are the annual performance progress reports. We just introduced a new, at the suggestion of Representative Nolan, a new graphic. So you can look at a glance, probably on the second or third page of these reports. How is the agency doing at a high level? Are they making progress? That's what the blue tells you. Are they not making progress? That's what the red tells you. And there would be kind of a yellow color if it's not clear. Making progress means they're on target. Not making progress means they're not. Unclear would mean something like they don't have a baseline data or a target set yet because it's a new measure. And there may be other reasons, but generally that's the primary reason why it wouldn't be clear, is they don't have a target with which to evaluate performance. You'll also get some high-level summary information and some general description of the challenges that agencies are facing. You might find that meaningful as well. But the part that you'll get in the document that Rita prepares for the with the benchmarks And the part you'll get in the annual report is every single measure that every agency has as a key performance measure will have one or two page description of how their performance has been. So they'll talk about current performance through the, again, that would be June 30th of 2006. I think I said it right this time. And it'll talk about the links to planning, the goals that they're trying to work towards, the strategies that they care about, targets, how they're doing, how they compare. So there's the comparison piece and what needs to be done. So what their actions are that they're planning to take. So hopefully this is meaningful. This helps inform the work that you'll be doing. You'll have the proposed measures. You know, you kind of walk through these with Sheila, but what you get in the proposed measures is you're going to get a list of what they want to carry forward to 07-09 and what they want to get rid of. And in many cases, there's, you know, I think several agencies have really recognized it's time to get rid of those output indicators. And a lot of agencies are asking for deletion of those kinds of measures and maybe proposing outcome-oriented measures or maybe recognizing that they already have a better outcome-oriented measure. In the case of LUBA, I mean, they had three measures related to posting of decisions. That's a lot. So anyway, the committee, subcommittee of natural resources will get to look more closely at these and decide if that makes sense or not. You'll also get in the proposed measures, again, just some background on how it links to the planning piece, how it links to the benchmarks, their strategies, the data piece, the actual performance piece. So you have it at your fingertips, and any targets they're proposing on new measures. So you'll be looking closely at the 2008-2009 targets information. You can see kind of on the bottom right-hand corner there. These forms also have end notes. So when you see the little one next to the 1992 up there, know there's going to be an end note at the back. And what we've tried to instruct agencies to do is, if you're asking for a change, you want something new, tell us why it matters. And that stuff's in the end notes. So you might want to, you know, if you have questions, look to the end notes to hopefully have answers for you. When it's all said and done, we're going to have a set of legislatively approved measures for 2007-09. And again, the format is just a table. What you'll be looking at in your work sessions are the measures, the language, the targets. And we're adding this time something new, which is LFO does a lot of work in analysis of these performance measures along with the budget process. So we want to document that. It's helpful for agencies. It's helpful for us to have a historical record. We've not done the best job in the past of capturing the progress and the direction that's been given to state agencies. And so this is going to get at that. And, of course, there'll be a subcommittee action summary as well. But since that hasn't happened yet, I didn't know what to say. And so, again, here, the process is you're going to get these materials to review, as Sheila talked about, during your binders. They'll be presented at agency presentations, so you should see annual report information, information about proposed measures for 07-09, the criteria reviews. When you get in work session, you'll see the LFO recommendation piece. We'll, you know, be documenting on LFO what your direction is around that, and then there'll be the attaching of that form, that last form I showed you, to the final budget reports. So there's just two supplemental slides you have in your packets. One has to do with the customer service measure. Again, I talked about that already. It's standardized. You'll see that in everybody's key performance measures. And we're introducing a new standardized measure for applicable boards and commissions. It's a best practices measure. So you may see that added. This was approved by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in the interim. And it's essentially asking boards and commissions to really be responsive to aligning their practices to a series of best practices. So that's all I have to say. I think we have about 20 minutes for any questions.
Thank you. Excellent job. I think that made it much clearer than we've had in the past, quite frankly, and hopefully this is a really good start. Not expect to remember all this, so don't worry about that, but at least it gives you an orientation. Representative Dinkfelder.
Thank you.
Could we, Jackie, could you either sit by a mic or sit up at the table so that the tape recorder can get your question?
My question is, I can reject, I can, or do you need it?
You need it on the tape.
Okay.
State your name for the record. Representative Jackie Dingfelder, House District 45. My question is, if you can, I think I have a sense of this because I sat on the Audits Committee last session and did the Information Technology Committee, and we heard some more information about audits during the interim. But if you could help me better understand the role that both external and internal audits play in the interrelationship with the Ways and Means process, to make sure that all of that information is factored into, you know, our decisions when we're reviewing budgets. In other words, there's some very salient information that came out of audits from the Secretary of State's office, sure, and also the internal auditors that work in many of the agencies. So I just need to get a better understanding of how that information gets funneled through the Ways and Means process.
Ken, I don't know if you want to come up and help address that issue. I have been at LFO 3 months, and I am just learning. I spent 8 years on the executive side, so I'm just learning the lingo on the legislative side. So I'm going to ask Ken to maybe help respond to this question.
As Secretary of State audit reports are one of the items that we ask agencies to supply to as part of their presentation binders. So if any kind of an audit has been done in the past 2 year cycle, they will give you a copy of that in their binder, and that they will go. It'll be a reference document for you during the public hearing phase and the work session phase on the agency budget, but it will be made available, and we'll try to highlight those for you that they're in the document. Now, and the committee can talk about the results of those and look at it. And there's also a section in the budget binders, I believe, that where they have to list those kinds of reports. We also ask them to include any significant report that they've done over the past 2 years in that presentation binder also. Senator Carter.
I want to follow up with Jackie's questions because I think it's a very significant question. In that there have been times when we get reports and get audits, and it becomes so political that if you start acting on audits, then people get crazy. And I think that if we are going to take in consideration best practices and look at performance measures of agencies, that's going to be one that we should really, really try to tackle, because it doesn't make sense for state government to spend as much money as it does in having audits and they lay on the shelf. We don't do anything about it. And in the past, when some of us have tried to do something about it, look at them, nothing has been done. Let's take affirmative action. We've never followed any of our rules on that. The government has spent about $10 million to $11 million in the last 4 years as a result of a lack of agencies paying attention to the problems that many state workers have. So we end up paying a lot of money out on lawsuits. What kind of sense is that? When people get uptight about it. So I'm glad to see all the new people, because maybe they will feel emboldened enough to say, I don't care if you get mad agencies, this should not be, and it should not happen. You have performance measures. If people are committed to what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it, i.e., we're going to work on affirmative action, we're going to see that more women are hired in these agencies. We're going to see that more people of color are here. And then when everybody brings their report in every year, they have the same old, same old. They haven't done anything in that area, and yet we just let it go by as a legislature all over again. And so that's a very significant question that you ask.
Great example.
Another comment I can send me real quick is I would assume that if a Secretary of State audit or a joint legislative audit committee audit is done, that you will use that to inform yourselves about ways to help the agency either from a performance standpoint or to find efficiencies so the agency can do better performance in other areas or to do other things you want. The other thing that we'll my recollection is that last session we pushed real hard to make sure all agencies had of any size had internal auditors so that they would do a better job of dealing with their own financial information. And then lastly, one of the tasks that Dawn alluded to will be now that we're going to performance-based budgeting based on data, we need to audit the validity of the data. Yeah, so we don't get performance creep like you would in a school where you know, require everyone to get A's to graduate and all of a sudden everyone's getting A's. We're going to audit the data, and that'll be probably the new major task with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee or whatever audit committee is established to help keep things going on track. We won't be micromanaging these agencies. It'll be much like the IRS checking on them periodically when things need to be checked on to make sure we're getting good information to base our decisions on. Other questions?
Yeah, this is a question sort of from the committee perspective. It's a pretty long question, so and I think you could be helpful as well. But in your opening remarks, Senator Schrader, you said you don't want to have moving targets, so you don't want to be creating a bunch of new performance measures. So I guess my question is, since this analysis that we're doing, these analyses are absolutely driven by performance measures, and methodology is really everything when you have any kind of intellectual activity. So, and the foundational premise is what is measurable is important, and what is not measurable or perhaps cannot be measured is unimportant or irrelevant. So if we can't, as a committee members create new performance measures or really change the performance measures, how does this facilitate an intellectually rigorous analysis of what's happening?
My statements were a dramatization, I think, to make the case that Don just made, where we don't want to be changing things all the time so that there are all moving targets. And also to emphasize to the subcommittees that I'd like to see much more emphasis put on establishing better targets. That's not to say that you can't change performance measures. I expect that to be the case in a number of situations, but not a lot. I mean, unless it's really critical. So my comments were, as usual, my shy, retired way of dramatizing that your emphasis should be elsewhere, not on trying to say because I, Representative Bellizio or Senator Schrader, think I know what's right, true, and great with the world, that this should be the measure, as opposed to what a lot of work's been done over the last 5 years has informed us. You may have some good reasons. You may be absolutely correct, and I think Dawn indicated that a lot of the agencies have realized only now what an outcome is after 5 years, as opposed to an output. So we're going to see some changing measures. But my comments are to not stifle your intellectual creativity, but to put the emphasis of your intellectual creativity where it might be of most advantage this particular session. Representative Morgan, then Representative Potek.
Thank you. Just a comment on performance measures. This is, as the co-chair mentioned, something that I also have been working on for quite some time and see it as, I think, much more of a transitional process than the co-chair sees it as. During the time that we've actively been engaged in performance measures, which has been about 3 biennia now, we've seen the process, I think, evolve quite profoundly. And I am really heartened with how much better we are at aligning performance measures with the Oregon benchmarks, kind of having a integrated vertical system for looking at things at increasingly less detail. Because the thing that became clear to us early on in this was the information that's meaningful to the citizens of the state of Oregon is very far from the information that what we would use in our budget discussions, and that information is very far from the measurements that an agency administrator would use to try to assess success or failure opportunities within their own agencies. So this thing has changed shape profoundly over the last three biennia, and I hope that we would continue to have a system where we were open to entertaining innovations and changes in it. I think that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it makes great difficulty in measuring if you keep moving the goalposts. But I would hate to close the door on innovative ways to be looking at measuring outcomes and looking for opportunities to do that better than we do it now.
That's well said, I think. Representative Kotek.
Thank you. Representative Titi Kotek, House District 24. Two clarifying questions. Did agencies get any input during the interim on which measures they might want to alter or delete, like we saw in the LUBA example? Were they getting input from LFO? I'm just curious if that's just coming straight out of the agencies or they had some other input from elsewhere, interim committees. Second question, just your thoughts on the interaction between high-level outcomes and key performance measures in some of the larger agencies. I don't know if you've addressed that yet. You know, we've seen the proliferation of high-level outcomes, the HLOs, as as key performance measures haven't changed, but we have more high-level outcomes. What the relationship is? Should we be replacing one for the other? Just your thoughts. Thanks.
Go, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'll answer the first part, and you can address the second part. The first part was about interim direction to the agencies. The Joint Legislative Audits Committee was the domicile for that discussion. During the budget reviews 2 years ago, many of the agencies were directed to come back to the Joint Legislative Audits Committee for specific discussions around their performance measures. The co-chair and I both served on the Joint Legislative Audits Committee, as did several other members of the Full Ways and Means Committee. So we have seen a number of those agencies during the interim developing a better sense of outcomes-based performance measures.
And I think there's continuing work on trying to differentiate and narrow down the key performance measures. The Oregon University system has a ton of measures, and they've been in the forefront of trying to get to what they would be the most important the outcome measures to inform you where your discussion should start, not where it ends. And then as you delve into that, you may find a need to go into deeper work, even go into the outputs and inputs to help you better understand what decisions are going on and why the results are the way they are. I guess I'd also ask Dawn and Ken to respond to that last question.
What I might add is we talked very briefly about the criteria review process. And that is a process where historically you had a core group that involved budget management, legislative fiscal, progress board, some agency representatives giving feedback to agencies in what they were preparing to carry forward, which looked at what they had in the past as well, not just what they were proposing as new. This cycle, legislative fiscal and budget management work that together. And so agencies do get that feedback for change. Unfortunately, I think one of the weaknesses is we're doing it a little later in the process. I think an improvement would be to try and get that feedback in earlier. Ken, I don't know if you want to add anything, or Rita from the Progress Board.
We have talked to budget management about doing this criteria review sooner in that 2 year process cycle we had up there, doing it sooner in that cycle so that some advance notice can be given to agencies about what kinds of things they're proposing to change or what kinds of things we think they should be including or not including based on the directions that subcommittees give them this time. So we are talking about ways of refining that process. And as Representative Morgan mentioned, we're always looking at ways of trying to do things better. This isn't an evolving system. It's evolved quite a bit over the past few years, and we don't see it becoming static by any means. But as far as the number of we're trying to minimize the number of key performance measure changes. That doesn't mean that agencies can't have other performance measures. If they're really managing their programs for outcome-based results, they should have other performance measures other than the key ones. And if you want to direct an agency to develop a performance measure on some topic, it doesn't have to be a key measure. And then they can track that over the next 2 years, and they can report back to you on what they've done. So there are other ways of having agencies track their outcomes.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understood your second question. Are you saying what is the difference between...
We have 2 minutes to answer Tina's question.
Less than that. I think it's just that I've seen some of the key performance measures primarily in DHS, and then a very supplemental set of high-level outcomes supporting those key performance measures, and some of the HLOs seem more outcome-based than the performance measures and vice versa. So
we'll revise that. House's got to get to the floor at 11 o'clock, so we're just going to be very quick, so...
Okay, I have two loaded questions, but I'll give you the less loaded one.
That's fine.
Much of our funding in human services and in education goes to entities outside of state government. Are we going to look at the potential of having better performance measures for some of those functions outside of state government? I'll give you... an area that I'm not in, actually, as a subcommittee chair. In human services, our county partners perform many of those functions through a whole host, many times, of nonprofits. Are we going to look more closely at performance in those areas where the dollars are going outside the state government?
The answer to that is yes, and that's how you dig deep. In other words, the measure at the top, say children and families, shows you what they're doing on, say, teen pregnancy. And it may or may not be at a level where you think it should be. What I would hope that the committee would do is say, well, what's the ratio? And then within each county, you know, what programs could be being used? Why does Washington County have so much better results than Clackamas County? And that, then you'll be going down to the program level, and you'll be saying, well, geez, that's just Washington County's using such and such a program as opposed to what Clackamas County is using. And that will hopefully then be an example for all the counties. Say, well, geez, maybe I ought to look at Washington County's model. That might work in my county also. So that you guys have a lot of in-depth work to do as you drill down in these budgets and these performances to figure out what's going on, and that would be true in any area. Senator Westland.
Thank you. Just a comment, Mr. Chair, and perhaps this is helpful for those new members that have just parachuted in behind the lines with us in the budget wars, even for some senior members. We've got to appreciate just how much of a sea change, a cultural change is taking place, or has taken place in the last 3-4 years, trying to get to a point of rational, objective measures. I mean, Representative Galizio's comment, these aren't just cast in stone. I mean, there's a level of intellectual honesty and intuitive honesty to evaluating these. It's just not a mathematical calculation. But as we continue to evolve these to where we can get to a more rational return on investment type of allocation of scarce state resources, that's what we're all doing. I very much appreciated the co-chair's words this morning in terms of strict sideboards that they laid out for us, but a very, you know, inclusive and large measure of team in what we're all doing here. This is a very collaborative effort, and there is a little give and take. But as we continue to move forward, we will be able to refine and hone and objectify these measures to a greater degree than we already have. This continues to be a work in progress, and it's one of our most important functions.
Last comment for this morning would be our good colleague and friend, Representative Morgan.
Just very quickly, and it is to build on Senator Devlin's comment. comment on the dimensionality of this, that I think that one of the things that's become very intriguing to us is to take a look at the continuum of service. When we're talking about the K-12 system, the interrelationship between the pieces of the education system and how they work together and how to use performance measures to facilitate that discussion. Also the dimensionality of service provision in public safety and human services, where the bulk of the services are subcontracted out at some kind of local level. How do you use performance measures to gauge effectiveness there? So there, this is a very rich field for discussion.
So parting comment is leave these binders, take these, and bring them back. These are your responsibility. Thank you for good attendance today. We're adjourned.